On the overtime front, you may remember that the DOL issued a final rule in May of 2016 that sent us all into a flurry. And I dare say that many of you were advising clients, and maybe many clients made changes based on the final rule that was supposed to go into effect in December of 2016, and that rule was enjoined by a judge in the Eastern District of Texas and has sat. So this is the new proposed rule that would replace that final rule from 2016. It's long awaited, and it was finally issued on March 7th of this year. The rule proposes an increase in the minimum salary from $23,660, which has been in place for a long time. That's $455 a week. And it would increase that to $679 a week, or $35,308 on an annual basis. How does the DOL get to that number? Well, like in 2016, what they did is they took the 20th percentile of the earnings of full-time salaried employees, this gets a little complicated, of workers in the lowest wage census bracket. That was the South. It was the South back in 2016, and it's still the South now. So that's how they come up with that number. The final rule in 2016 was higher under the Obama administration. That was $47,476. So this is a sort of a, you know, in the middle of those two. There aren't going to be regional differences in terms of the salary that's set. And there was also talk about whether there needed to be different salaries set based on the white-collar exemption that it was potentially at issue, professional, administrative, et cetera. But the DOL didn't adopt that. The highly compensated annual minimum would go up quite a bit to $147,414. And again, the criteria for establishing that figure is 90% of the full-time salaried workers nationwide. There would not be automatic updates to these threshold numbers, although they would be reviewed every 4 years by notice and comment rulemaking. In terms of employers and being able to satisfy those thresholds, they can adopt or establish up to 10% amount of that amount to come through bonusing and payment of commissions. And there's also sort of the ability to catch up. So if after a 52-week period, there's a shortfall of a bit of establishing these minimums, then there can be a payment of obviously up to 10% of that salary, about $3,500, to be able to qualify for that exemption potentially. But remember, nothing about the duties tests have changed. These are just the numbers that you look at initially as you're evaluating whether someone would meet potentially an exemption, right? So we don't anticipate this final rule would go into effect until 2020. Who knows about the litigation challenges that may follow thereafter? But here's the long-awaited rule. Okay, also coming out of the DOL is the joint employer rule that was released on April 1st, and that just clarified the four-part test the DOL looks to in establishing whether there is the existence of a joint employer relationship. This dovetails with the NLRB's joint employment rulemaking, who's hiring and firing that individual, who's supervising and controlling the work, who's determining the rate of pay, and what do the employment records show in terms of who that individual belongs to, so to speak. There's also the regular rate rule that was issued on March 28th. The purpose for this rule is to simply update what counts as the regular rate, because that definition had not been updated in decades. And so I don't know that there's anything sort of counterintuitive about what the DOL says in this rule, but you essentially work backwards, and they identify a number of categories of pay, so to speak, categories that are not pay. So wellness program credits, gym access, reimbursement expenses, discretionary bonuses, all those sorts of things they say that would not count toward the regular rate of pay. On the health and welfare front, I won't bore you too much with this stuff because although I love ERISA, many of the people in this room I would dare say, don't. Just to sensitize you to some of the things that were coming out of the DOL on these topics, the association health plans was a rule that the DOL put out in June of 2018, and it essentially was pushed through. Secretary of Labor Acosta tells us, because President Trump was really doing everything that he could to expand affordable health care coverage to small employers, because there was a perception that they couldn't keep up with the large companies and offer the same sort of benefits. So they tried to do this workaround where they would create these association health plans, these groupings of small businesses who would band together either by geography or industry and create their own little plan, so to speak, and be able to operate that way. Ultimately, a number of state attorney generals led by New York said, you know, DOL, you're violating the Administrative Procedures Act. You're overstepping your regulatory authority, and a district judge agreed. So that rule was held to be invalid.